my family. I'm Vicky, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Vicky.
And I am nervous. This is my very first time I've ever shared at a convention, so I need to just get that out the way, because I have been so annoyed since coming here. You know, when someone had asked me, Vicky, I need you to come and do a workshop at the convention for me this year, and I was like, okay. You know, because originally it was supposed to be on another topic, you know. It wasn't a step topic. And I virtually am one of those, you know, I'm a step sponsor, you know. The steps were embedded in me very early on in recovery, and, you know, and I'm diligent with the steps. But when she said, no, Vicky, I'm going to need you to go ahead and do the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth step. Just so happens that when she asked me that, the night before, my sponsor had suggested that I redo a fourth step on just relationships. So, because I was, you know, in a emotional, unbalanced situation in relationship. And she just suggested, well, instead of going through a whole fourth step, just do one strictly on relationships. So before I get to where I'm at today with that part, I'm going to start with when I first started in my steps. I didn't come right in going right to the fourth step. You know, I had to start with the first three to get a foundation to give me some courage and some heart to open up to someone else. You know, because my story was that, you know, I wore so many masks that I couldn't really trust anybody, you know, and I really didn't want anybody to know who I was, you know, and I really didn't want anybody to judge me, you know, any worse than I was judging my own self. And I just thank God for the sponsor that God put in my life, you know, because she's just like me. We're more alike than different. And I guess that message is that don't try to do any step work without a sponsor, you know. So my sponsor suggested that, you know, when I first got here to get into steps as soon as I got here, and I did, because I was off the Richter when I got here. I needed to get grounded right away. Because she knew, and she knew me, you know, before I came to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, she knew that if I didn't hurry up and get grounded real fast, I was on my way back out of here. You know, so of course I did my first three steps, and I got a little bit of a foundation, got some courage and hope to finally become willing to write the fourth step. And that's what the fourth step is for me, just becoming willing. You know, because for so long, I've only been willing to pay the dope man. Wasn't willing to do a whole lot of anything else but pay the dope man. That's it. So coming here and, you know, getting those things, you know, the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness, you know, I was able to develop those principles by doing my first three steps. So when I got to my fourth step, and I stayed on the phone with my sponsor, you know, the whole time I was writing my fourth step, because I was so afraid. I was so afraid, you know, that I was going to finally release those demons that had held me bondage for so long. I was finally going to be able to tell somebody about all the stuff that I thought that only I did, that I thought I was only guilty of, and that I felt shameful for. You know, I thought that I was the only person in the world who grew up without a mother and a father. You know, I thought I was the only person in the world, you know, who grew up in institutions and group homes and foster homes and, you know, didn't have a family that cared and loved for her. You know, so very, you know, at a very early age, I was damaged because I didn't have any nurturing. I didn't have any of those things that you're supposed to get, you know, being raised by, you know, a family. Well, since coming here, I got a whole brand new family, y'all. I got a mommy, I got a daddy, I got a brother and a sister and all that, aunt and uncle and everything. So when I had my sponsor on the phone while I'm writing, I kept asking her questions about the questions that I'm writing. Because I'm one of those kind of people who I think I'm real intellectual and I'm real smart. And sometimes for my own good. I know everything. Don't know anything. And so, you know, I would start to question the questions that I had to answer. You know, and I'll say this. My very first fourth step was AA. And I know this is an NA meeting, but if it wasn't for AA, there would be no NA. And I'm real clear about that. So my very first fourth step was an AA fourth step. And with the AA fourth step, I wound up answering about 225 questions. That started from my childhood to my adolescence to my here and now, which was something that I needed because my sickness was very deep-rooted. And I had to dig real, real deep to find out why I act the way I act, why I've done what I've done, and why I still behave the way that I do. And the only way that I could do that was to do a fourth step, a thorough fourth step. You know, and I had a sponsor that was not taking any wooden nickels when it came to my fourth step. She was very, very adamant and detailed with me. You know, you have got to do it. You have got to do it. And when I would try to give her any of that surface crap, you know, Vicki, I know you. That's not what's going on. You know, so, of course, I started answering the questions, and I started to see the patterns. I started to see the patterns in my life. I started to see the pattern of the lying, of the manipulation, using people, places, and things. You know, at a very early age, now, if you heard me, I've been institutionalized. So, you know, growing up institutionalized as a young girl, being able to communicate to people that I feel insecure and inadequate and out of place, there's just things that you couldn't do being institutionalized. You know, I had to wear this outer shell to protect myself. And so, of course, that's where, you know, a lot of my masks came from by being institutionalized. I had to be somebody that I really wasn't. I also, by being institutionalized, you know, was able to learn early on how to lie real, real good, you know, because, you know, whenever they said to do something, I said I did it knowing that I didn't do it, so I was able to lie very early on. So when I went to the very first institution that I went to at the age of 7, 2 years after that, they started sending me to an outside public school. And in that outside public school, I was ridiculed, I was teased, you know, because I was an orphan. Because I didn't have a mother and father, I was an outcast. You know, and so very early on, I told myself lies. I made myself believe that my mother and father had died in a fire. And I told myself that so that I didn't have to deal with the fact that they didn't want me, or that they couldn't take care of me, or that there was issues in the home that I couldn't be there. Whatever the reason was, to this day, I don't know. To this day, I can say it really doesn't matter. Today. Now, when I first did my fourth step, it mattered. You know, well, I'm over that hump. And I was able to, 30 years later, admit to my sponsor in my fifth step the feelings that I felt as a young girl of being abandoned and being an orphan, you know, and not having to lie anymore. Being able to be okay with, you know what, I grew up without a mom and dad. Okay, I'm not the only one in the world. It's okay. And I didn't know that until I came here to the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Until I came here, I started hearing my story. I mean, not just one time, but over and over and over. You know, I was like, oh, my God. And if anybody's like me, I have been searching my whole entire life to just feel like I was a part of. Just feel like I belong somewhere. Because, man, being institutionalized or not having any family and not having any roots that you know of, man, you just feel like you just in limbo. You know, you just feel like you in limbo. So I lived my entire life in limbo with the use of knockouts, you know, because I didn't want to deal with reality. You know, so at a very early age, I didn't want to deal with reality. I didn't want to deal with the fact that I didn't have a family. Okay, so that was one of the major issues that I was able to see, you know, where the patterns came from while I was writing my fourth step. I was also able to see the insecurities and the inadequacies and all the things that I felt, the low self-esteem and all those issues that I suffered from. You know, because I didn't have, you know, the nurturing, you know, upbringing that I needed to have that confidence and, you know, to have those secure feelings and you know, and those things I was supposed to have. I understand by writing a fourth step and then sharing my fifth step that's where those came from, my childhood. You know, I also understand by writing my fourth step that I still suffer from those same things today in 99% of my relationships. I'm not just talking about my intimate relationships. I'm talking about relationships with my sponsor, my sponsees, any members of my family, any of y'all. And any given day, I can act out on one of those insecurities or, you know, inadequacies, and I'm not feeling real good about myself, so I want to make you feel bad about you. You know, so I want to tear you down so I can try to build myself up, and in the end, all I did was really tear myself a little bit lower. You know, I understand where those things come from, and today, because of doing a fourth and a fifth step, I don't act out on them as much. It doesn't mean I don't act out on them. My significant other can clearly tell you that I do. But it's okay, because I am getting better one day at a time. But I know for me that the first inkling of being released from bondage from myself was writing my fourth step. So if there's anybody in here who hasn't embarked on writing that fourth step, trust me when I tell you it's the best thing you could possibly do for your life. If you really want to stay here and feel a part of something that's great and big, do that fourth step. And make sure you quickly follow it up with a fifth. You know, because it's very, very important that you quickly follow it up with a fifth. And I'm speaking from my own experience, because when I did my first fourth step, I did not quickly follow it up with a fifth, and I almost drank a fifth. Because I'm defiant by nature. So my sponsor had communicated to me in a very loving way, baby, baby. You know how your sponsor do. Uh-huh. I'm just suggesting that, you know, and that you don't get married, baby, until you do your fourth and fifth step. I have my own ideas. That I could get married and think I know who I was and think I knew who I was marrying without doing a fourth and a fifth step. I had not a clue what I was getting myself into. You know, they say if you really want to meet who you are and be miserable, get in a relationship without doing a fourth and a fifth step. I'm here to tell you, I've experienced it. And I have never in my life experienced gut wrenching pain without the use of drugs. I'm talking about it felt like somebody had reached inside me and just took my heart out and cut it in half. I had never in my life experienced that kind of pain. Not without using something or somebody. You know, but I got through that pain because of y'all. I was able to come in here and I was able to share that pain. I was able to have a sponsor who didn't beat me up for not taking her suggestion, who loved me in spite of the decision that I made and allowed me to fall and bump my head over and over and over, you know, and still love me, doesn't judge me, you know. And let me share this about my fifth step. It was one of the very first inklings that I got of something real spiritual. Something outside of me that I couldn't feel. I mean, couldn't see, touch, taste, or smell. But I could feel for the first time. I was sharing with my sponsor, you know. Because my fifth step for me, my very first fourth step, I mean, my very first fifth step was just a reading of the stuff that I wrote in the fourth step. And as I began to start reading, it's like, you know, because my sponsor brings in God before we start actually sharing, you know, and so that we know that he's in charge, you know. And before I could even open my mouth, she shared the one thing, the same exact thing that I swore that I would take to the grave, that she did herself. That was so spiritual for me. I didn't even have to open my mouth. And she said, well, I'm going to share something with you that I swore I'd take to the grave. Now, I'm not willing to share in an open meeting, and I'm going to tell you that. But I was able to share it with somebody, and it says in the fifth step that you have got to share it with somebody. And the God of your understanding. And that's what I did. And now I'm no longer held bondage by that secret.
That's right.
Now, you know, does anybody feel me when I say that? Have, you know, it was just something that was just so horrible in my life. And just to hear somebody else share that same exact thing, I'm like, oh my God. We are more alike than different. I now believe that shit. You know? So that was real spiritual for me for my fifth step. You know, and I had to wind up making a couple of appointments to you know, thoroughly finish my fifth step. Because it was so, like I said, I had so many deep-rooted issues that I couldn't finish it in one day. You know, I had some very deep-rooted issues that had to take over a period of a couple of days. You know, but thank God for my process, because it was because I got married, because I got in that pain, and my ass got on fire, I hurried up and did a fourth and a fifth step. So that just tells you I'm motivated by what?
Pain.
You know, all my life. And I was sharing this with my significant other earlier today, that baby, I associate pain with love. Because very early on, the one person who was supposed to love me and take care of me, no matter what, abandoned me and betrayed me. And that was my mother. So, of course, I suffer from some very deep-rooted trust issues. So to be able to finally trust another woman with all that shit that I have been holding all my life, that's some spiritual stuff. You know, because I never thought that I would be able to sit in a room on a carpeted floor, and it's real spiritual, and she's got the candles going and all this other stuff to make me feel comfortable. And I'm talking to this woman like I've known her all my life. You know, it was real good for me. Real, real good for me. So anyway, as I'm doing my fifth step, my sponsor is sitting on the other side of the floor, and she's writing. I'm like, you know, I'm nosy as hell. I'm like, what you writing? Oh, just some stuff. Okay. Because she already knows how I am. If she had told me, I'm writing down your character defects, I'd have clammed right up. I'd have clammed right up. I'd have stopped talking, because I would have felt in my mind, she can right beat me up. She can right tear me down. You know, there you go. I ain't telling her nothing else. That's it. You know, but God knew who he was putting in my life. And so as she's writing, you know, of course I'm asking all these questions. And so I've completed my fifth step, and so then she shows me this two-sided list. On one side, she's got assets, and on one side, she's got defects. My assets outweigh my defects. And I thought my whole entire life that I was the worst person in the world. I really did. You know, I got here and got an image and an ego, you know, and I swear I'm the best thing in a bag of chips and all that other stuff. You know. But but that's not really who I am, you know. So anyway, she showed me my assets and she showed me my defects. And the very first instruction that she gave me was to get a dictionary and write out the definition of each one of those assets and defects. And that was truly a learning experience for me. It really was. I thought I knew some shit. You know, when she told me look up the word denial, I thought I knew what it meant. It's my number one character defect, denial. Because like I said, if you've really been listening to me, very early on I lied about where I came from and what happened to my parents. So I lied to myself my entire life. So I stay in denial. You know, and now, I'm not so much in denial anymore. I'm in just utter refusal. You know, sometimes I just refuse to do certain stuff. You know, but sometimes, you know, God has a different... You ever heard the saying? I heard it in the rooms before. If you ever want to hear, make God laugh, tell him your plans. So anyway, my number one character defect was denial. And it's probably my most glaring one because I'm in denial about a whole lot of things. You know, people, anytime someone tells you, more than one person tells you the same thing about you, it's probably true. You know, so I'm getting better with denial. And of course, along with denial is anger, revenge, and resentments. Abandonment and betrayal. Those are my defects. Now, can you imagine me being in a relationship with someone who I think has betrayed me? All that shit is coming out. Anger, resentment, revenge. I'm going to get you. You know, and I did that in all my relationships since being in recovery up till about 2 years ago. You know, you did me wrong, or I think you're getting ready to do me wrong. And all those issues kick up. You know, I've lived my whole life in fear. You know, so, and I kind of do that here today in my relationships. Either I'm afraid of you getting too close to me, or I'm afraid of you not accepting me. That's a two-sided thing. I'm afraid of you not accepting me, or I'm afraid of you being too close to me. That's confusion. You know, so I've had the opportunity to act out on those defects all at one time because someone didn't want to do me right. He said, I got 5 minutes. Okay. I've had the opportunity to act out on all those defects at one time. You know, and wind up finding myself in one of these corners, balled up, an emotional knot of pain. Because I'm not willing to let go of some of those defects. You know, it says in the sixth step, just become willing to let them go. You know what I'm saying? Just become willing to let them go because we're not going to be washed white as snow overnight. It says it in the literature. It says that we're not going to be able to get rid of all those things that we've had going on our entire life. And I also know that they're my defects, but sometimes, especially through my addiction, they have been my assets. You know, and I have just, based on me, you know, suffering from the disease of addiction, you know, I have used those defects really, really bad. You know, they could just be assets if I use them in the right way. So I got some assets that says that I'm loving and I'm caring and I'm compassionate and I'm trustworthy and I'm dependable on a good day. You know, and all those good things, you know. But most of all, I found some balance in the sixth step. I found some balance that, you know, some days are going to be good days, some days are going to be bad days. But then I hear you guys, you know, say, keep it simple. Every day is a great day as long as you don't use. Right? Whether you acted out on a defect or not, it's been a great day because you didn't use. You know, and I know, I thank God. Now, I know that the reason why I'm clean today is because the God of my understanding. It wasn't steps that got me clean or keeps me clean. But it's the willingness to do the work on myself because the steps are designed to lead you back to where God wanted you to be in the first place. You know, that's my belief. You know, everyone is entitled to their own belief, but I believe that that's what those steps are entitled, you know, are for. And I believe that the sixth step, that it gave me the balance to understand that I could be just who I am. You know, and be comfortable in my own skin. Some days I'm not comfortable in my own skin. Some days I'm not all right being in a house by myself. Some days I am. So I understand that, You know, now I'm in a battle of balance. 9 times out of 10, it's an emotional balance. Because for so long, I used to my feelings, and today I don't use to my feelings. And today I can honestly say I don't use people to my feelings anymore. That took me a long time. You know, because my mentality has always been, you know, if I can't use drugs, I got to use something or somebody. Food, cigarettes, something to fill that void, to make me feel better about myself. And I guess I'll share this in close, right? For me, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth step were the steps that kind of turned my whole thinking around, kind of made me feel like I was a part of the greater whole, made me feel like, man, I can do this thing. I can really do this thing and be okay. I really can. And if you haven't gotten into the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth step, it's okay. Keep coming back. When your ass get on fire and you got a sponsor that does steps, please get you a sponsor that does steps. Please get a sponsor that does steps. Then you will, sooner or later, embark on the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth step. Just become willing. Thank you for letting me share.
For our next speaker from Atlanta, we're going to have Larry. Victor, I'm sorry. Victor.
Hi, my name is Victor. I'm a blessed recovering addict. I was told what I can't do alone, we can do together. So we can have a moment, could we have a moment of silence so God can express himself through me so I can touch at least one person in this room. Thank you. You know, the steps are the lifeblood of this program. That's how I get better. And, you know, depending on, if you look at a child, right, you look at the parents and see how that child was raised, then you can get an idea of where this child is coming from, right? So I just want to share a few home groups that I had since I've been in this program. My first home group was Jamaica 2 for 1. It's in Queens. Meets on Wednesdays at 7:30. They still meet to this very day. They have two meetings on Wednesdays, one's at 5:45 and the next one at 7:30. My next home group, I moved to Brooklyn, was Steps and Traditions on Monday. I held a position at that group as a treasurer for about 3 years, right? But I always remain in a step and tradition meeting, right? Today, my home group is Hardcore and meets in Atlanta. We'll meet at 1 o'clock on Saturdays, and they have a step meeting. And usually I'm in a step meeting because it's two meetings. They split up into another one. But if you're ever in Atlanta and you need to make a meeting, I'm going to give you my number. My number is 678-887-8033. So if you're ever in the ATL and you need a meeting, give me a call. If I can't meet you, I got a lot of sponsees. Somebody will come and get you. Okay. I didn't know where I was going to go with this, right? Because it's funny, when I was asked to do this workshop, I was at a particular point in my life, but things have changed since that time, and I'm going to share about it. I'm going to take a chance, I'm going to take a risk, because it's a lot of fear in there, and I know that usually when I don't want to share, disease has got me stuck somewhere, right? So we're going to go here first, right? I was taught, right, to look up the definition of words. Because depending on where that word is placed in a sentence, change the context of that meeting, right? I mean, of that paragraph or that sentence, right? So, I learned that since I've been in Atlanta. You know what I mean? My first sponsor wasn't big on that. But you know, when I first got to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, all we had was this basic text. We didn't have all that other literature. They didn't even have the step working guide when I first got here. You know, so what I was told to do was look up the seven deadly sins. What the hell is seven deadly sins? I didn't know what they were. So he told me to get a dictionary, right, a biblical dictionary, and find out what they were. So I did that. But let's go to step four. It says, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, right? The first word I looked up was searching. Examine or explore thoroughly, scrutinizing through. Fearless, without fear, not afraid, brave, intrepid. And I looked up intrepid. Alarmed, anxious, not afraid, bold, fearless, dauntless, very brave. Moral, relating to, dealing with, or capable of making the distinction between right, wrong, and conduct. So, this fourth step, right, it takes the cover off the disease of addiction, right? Because the disease dwells in darkness and it dies the light of exposure. So, they said in the basic text, it says, addicts tend to lead secret lives. And still today, with my time, I'm going to touch on that too. Okay, it says, by working the first three steps, we have formed a solid foundation for our recovery. Our active addiction cannot remain arrested unless we build upon this foundation. So that's why they said steps 1, 2, and 3 is a necessary preparation when we get to that fourth step. You know, the fourth step, I have been around for a while and I've seen people, what they call the 1, 2, 3 shuffle. Because when it's time to take that mirror and put it up to your face, it's a scary thing. You know, because I use a lot because of the way I felt. And I don't have that today. What do you do? We'll get to that. Okay. It says, however, our experience as a fellowship shows that sooner or later, members who do not work this crucial step relapse. You know, and that's true. Because I want to hide behind a mask, and they told us the mask must go. You know, I had been through these steps. The sponsor that I had told me that steps 1, 2, and 3 was giving up, right? 4 through 8 is cleaning up, and 9 through 12 is keeping up. So I was using the maintenance steps. You know what I mean? So I'm a person that read the literature. If you have a problem with that, that's who I am. And the 12 steps said we have our own unique way of carrying this message, and this is mine. Okay, the fourth step is a turning point in our journey of recovery. It is a time for deep personal reflection. The confusion that we attempted to mask with self-deception and drugs is about to diminish. We are embarking on a search for insight into ourselves, our feelings, our fears, our resentments, and the patterns of behavior that make up our lives. That's me to the core. You know, I forgot where it's at in the basic text. It says, we seem like this strong, secure person on the outside, and really we this shaky, insecure person on the inside. And that's what helps me to get more secure with myself, is doing that fourth step and finding out that the drugs was only really a symptom of my disease. Because I can remember as a kid going into the candy store, right, the man had turned his back and now sticks some gum in my pocket, right? So the next day I got some gum, so he turned his back again. Now I got some gum and something else. So it was exciting getting outside the door. You know what I'm saying? And that carried over. You know, that carried over. And it says, we may find that our sexual beliefs and behaviors has caused problems in our relationship. We may have settled for sex, really, when we really wanted love. We may have used sex to get something we wanted or believed that by sex we could extract commitment from an unwilling partner. We ask ourselves if our sexual behavior has been based in selfishness or love. We may have used sex to fill the spiritual void we felt inside. Some of us felt the shame as a result of our sexual practice after years of compulsively acting on our fears and misguided beliefs about sex. We want to be at peace with our own sexuality. This is a very uncomfortable topic for most of us. However, if we want something different than what we had, it is necessary we begin the process of change by writing about it. Sex has played a big part in my recovery. When I first got here, I didn't feel good about myself because my mother told me I ain't shit, you ain't gonna never be shit. I cursed the day you was born, you just like your father, and I didn't know. The drugs just pushed that shit down. It just pushed it down. So when I got here, you know, I got to the room for 11 months clean. I was in a therapeutic community. I was hospitalized twice for my heart, so they thought I was going to have a heart attack. So I had made an arrangement to go to the aftercare, right? So when I got here, the first meeting I ever went to, I was elected the co-chairperson there, right? And then the next meeting, what happened? Let me go back a little bit. It was a sister. I got mentally discharged on a Wednesday. That Friday, I went back to the program I was in. They had a function, and I seen this sister I had a one-night stand with. And she was looking good. She was talking about Narcotics Anonymous. I had never even heard of Narcotics Anonymous. She said, meet me at this meeting. I said, I'll be there. So when I got there, you know what? She had the nerve not to show up. But it was a celebration that day, right? And the person that was celebrating became my sponsor, right? So they said, I heard this thing. They used to say, keep coming back. Oh, I said, if I keep coming back, I'm going to run into her. You know, a couple of months later, I ran into her, but it wasn't about her. I was about saving my life. My sponsor is a bisexual man, and I was homophobic at the time. But God have a strange way of working things out. Because when I did my fourth step, right, we could never seem to get together. Every time we got together and we was going to do the fifth, something would always come up. You know, the phone would ring or his mother would call him upstairs. But I was determined, right? I'd have put this stuff down on paper, right? They said we put down our assets and our liabilities, right? You see, assets is first, right? Because I dwell so much on a negative, right? My list, right, I had a few pages on my character defects. On my assets, I had one page. But it has reversed itself over these years, right? And the experience, serenity we must bring, to alter the self-defeating patterns that have prevailed us in our lives. The fourth step helps us identify those patterns. We begin to see how we have maneuvered through life, perhaps not consciously planning our own demise, but making choices which resulted in our lives becoming unmanageable. Even with years in recovery, your life could become unmanageable. With 12 and 12 and 12 up under your belt, your life still can become unmanageable. You know, I was told to build my foundation on rock, not sand. So if you're sitting in these meetings, just know that you are special because not many people come to step meetings anymore. And forget about a tradition meeting. You can hang it up. You know what I'm saying? But traditions help me in my relationship with other people. Right? And one last thing. It says, the fourth step provides us with the initial insight we need to grow, whether we are writing our first inventory or our 20th. We are starting a process to take us from confusion to clarity, from resentments to forgiveness, from spiritual confinement to spiritual freedom. We can turn to this process again and again. When we are confused, we are angry. When we have problems that don't seem to disappear, an inventory is a good way to take stock of just what we want, take stock just where we stand on the path of recovery. You know, inventory for me is to see. Like a store. A store has to take stock and see what they have. Like, if you keep stuff on the shelf too long, it's going to go bad. Right? So the same thing with the disease of addiction, right? I had to see what's working for me right now, what I want to keep, and what I need to disregard because it's not contributing to my spiritual growth. Okay, we're going to move on to one last thing. The steps are tools we use over and over on our spiritual path. In the process of recovery, God will reveal more to us as we have the maturity and the spiritual strength to understand. Over time, the nature of the work has to do. Okay. Over time, the nature of the work we have to do disclose to us as we continue in recovery. We begin to resolve some of the basic conflicts contributing to our addiction. As the pain of old wounds begin to fade, we begin to live more fuller in the present. So what this is the end of the fourth step, right? So it's preparing you to go to the fifth. You know, they said spiritual principles are never in conflict. They complement each other, just like one complement two to three, and so on, right? Step five, we admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. the exact nature of our wrongs. Admit, to acknowledge or confess, exact, not deviating in form or content, without variation, precious, nature, the essential character of a thing, quality or qualities that make it something what it is, essence. You know, that step, man, is like, you find out what your character defects are, right? When I find out my character defects, I had to find out why I did them in the first place. Like, this is one I always use. When one time I was on the train in New York, and I had been drinking. So I looked across and I seen this lady, and in my mind, I said, I'm going to rape her. So the alcohol said, go ahead, do it. So I said, when she get off the next stop, I'm going to follow her. She got off at West 4th Street. So I got off with her, but I lost in the crowd. See, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because that was some dumb shit. That was really dumb. You know, but the alcohol had took over. You know, and, you know, the sixth step. There's some stuff I read in here, but I want to get to what's going on me right now. When we were entirely ready, to have God remove our defects of character. And the basic text said, why ask for something if you're not ready for it? You know, over the years I have worked on myself continuously, right? Because I believe in telling on myself, because I don't want to use. You know, they took my time yesterday, right? And I have 19 years, 6 months, and 14 days, right? The total days is 7,136 days. Now, I'm going to read something. I'm going to share with y'all where I'm at with my character defects today. Okay, this is from More Be Revealed. Sometimes we find ourselves caught up in old ideas, even with time in the program. The basis is always important to recovery. We need to avoid old thinking patterns, both the old ideas and the tendencies towards complacency. We cannot afford to become complacent because our disease is with us 24 hours. If while practicing these principles, we allow ourselves to feel superior or inferior, we isolate ourselves. We are headed for trouble. If we feel apart from other addicts, separation from the atmosphere of recovery, from the spirit of service to others, slows our spiritual growth. Complacency keeps us from goodwill, love, and compassion. Now, this is where I'm at. I'm taking a chance. When I got this topic, I was in a relationship. I was in love. I'm still in love. Right? Trying to let go, but want to hold on. Ain't an easy thing. Right? My ex and my ex came up here. We rode in the same car together. We in the same room together. But ain't nothing going on. And one of my fears about the relationship breaking up was somebody else in the room is going to get the pussy. And that had me locked. Like, I don't want that to happen. I got an image to uphold, you know. What kind of, 19 years, you know, I can't have nobody else getting this, you know. And I was afraid of that, right? So when we broke up, I told her, look, I feel like you're trying to control me. I said, look, if you feel that way, I think we should go our separate ways. She said, you really want to do that? I said, yeah. She said, I think you need to think about that. I said, nah. Right? So we got into some dialogue, and then I started talking about the sacrifices I made. And then she said this. She said, let me tell you about the sacrifices I made. I sacrificed my children. I sacrificed my morals. And I sacrificed not being attracted to you for 3 years. That shit cut like a knife. I had to leave. Right? Now, let me tell you the truth. When I got with my lady, she was had been separated from my husband for 6 months. She hadn't got a divorce all the time that we were together. So when she said that, I called two of my sponsees that came over, right? She was at a daughter house, and one of my sponsees, her and her daughter, him and her daughter, roommates. So I was telling them what happened. And I was trying to make sense out of what happened because it didn't make no sense. You know, and she was going through a lot. She had lost her job. Her son got kicked out of this program. She was going through a lot. But I just got tired of hearing you trying to control me. I heard that before from other people. But to hear it from your significant other, it's like, get out of here. You know, you tripping. You know, but so I went home, right? I went home. I got this special place where I pray at, and I cried because it hurt. So the next day we were supposed to watch the Super Bowl at her daughter's house. I told my sponsees, I said, I can't do it. I can't be around her, right? So we went to watch the Super Bowl somewhere else. And then she kept calling me. I wouldn't answer her calls because I was hurt. So she finally came over and we was talking. And she said, you knew that I wasn't attracted to you, physically attracted to you, when we got in the relationship. But I thought it had changed. You know what I'm saying? I thought it had changed. So, you know, hurt people hurt people. So instead of trying to just separate and leave it at that, man, you know, it's like trying to hold on, let go and hold on. That shit is not easy. Right? So the nature of what I'm trying to say, right, is the fear of somebody else getting the pussy, I wind up doing that to somebody else. You know why? I was feeling bad. I was feeling hurt. I was feeling angry, fearful. I had a lot of stuff going on inside of me with 19 years. You know, so this sister had told me she was attracted to me, was attracted to me before any of this took place, right? So what happened was I sat in the house for a month and a half. Not in the house, but I sat there. I was making meetings and doing what I needed to do, just faking it till I make it. And my sponsor, he said, man, you got to get out that house, man. You can't sit there, you know. You need to get back on the ball. So I got out, started going to these different functions. And I remember what this sister had said to me, right? So one night she came over and I thought we was going to have sex. It didn't work out. Right? I said, this shit is not going to work. Right then and there, that instant when I couldn't get off, I'm going to get some pussy. But prior to that, right, I had went to New York. I had planned it out. I'm going to New York. Somebody's going to be a victim. It did not work out. Because God was doing something for me that I didn't understand. And my sponsees didn't understand. I said, man, listen, y'all don't understand. They said, man up. Man up. Listen, I don't know what God is doing in my life. You know what I mean? So I got with the sister, right? And then she started giving me some money. One is too many and 1,000 never enough. I know you're having a hard time. You got to take care of everything by yourself. And she kept hitting me off. So now I feel obligated. Right? Now I'm on the programming committee for Magna in Atlanta. So they're doing this little tryout thing. Matter of fact, I was on this committee for a spiritual breakfast that's coming up in Atlanta. And these three sisters was going to do a cheerleading routine. So they back there doing the booty dance and all this, and I'm cheering and yeah. And then one of them, she called me up. You know I was always attracted to you. There goes number two. Right? I go by her job, you know. I'm just going by to give her a hug. That's all we're going to do. She jumps in the car. She starts kissing me. I'm getting worried. Now somebody's going to see us. Because I'm still holding on, you know. Man, I said, hold on. Let's go down the block. Go down the block. We fucking in the car. We finish. Drive off. The cops start following us. Right? So I said, oh, man. So we get back to the job. I told her, look, this ain't going to work. We can't do this no more. I don't care about that. You know, 5 minutes. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up. So, and then, right, I go back to a job. We fucking on the staircase. Right? Oh, we can't do this no more. We can't do this no more. It ain't right. And then her man came up and hugged me at a meeting. That shit tore me up. Right? So I'm telling, look, if you're not going to practice spiritual principles, I'm going to practice. So we're at the basketball game, right? I couldn't resist. I was stuck, obsessed, right? Another thing. Start messing with a newcomer. 60 days clean. Right? My grand sponsee. 60 days clean. And she feed my ego because I'm feeling like a piece of shit about myself. You know, with all what's going on with the relationship. So, I'm sharing that to let you know that there's something in here that talks about obsession. Okay. The disease of addiction can manifest itself in a variety of mental obsessions and compulsive actions that has nothing to do with drugs. We sometimes find ourselves obsessed and behaving compulsively over things we may never have had a problem with until we stop using drugs. We may once again try to fill the awful emptiness we sometimes feel with something outside ourselves. At any time we find ourselves using something to change the way we feel, we need to apply the principles of the first step. I'm powerless. My life is unmanageable. But I told my sponsee, her sponsor, she said, I felt like I left my daughter with you and you molested her. That hurts. I said, look, I ain't actually put me on no pedestal. I said, I'm human. I said, you need to love me through this. Right? I'm going to share this and I'm going to shut it down. I had got an email on the internet, right? And it was called A Second Chance. Right? It was this lady. She had walking across the street. She wasn't paying attention. And she messed around and got hit by a car. So while she was in the hospital, you know, the doctors were willing to do these plastic surgery on her. And she said, okay, right? She did the plastic surgery. And, she was in the hospital. She got out. Life was going well. Then she went back into the hospital again, right? She had another accident. So she got some plastic surgery. And she said, God, you know, I thought you said that you was going to look out for me. You weren't going to let nothing happen to me. And I'm in this hospital again. He said, okay. She had died and went up to heaven. So he sent her back down. Got another accident. So she went and got plastic surgery. Right? And then got in another accident. So she was asking God. She said, God, you know, you said you wasn't going to let nothing happen to me. But here I am in the same position again. He said, yeah, I told you that. But I didn't know you. You know, through the plastic surgery, she had altered who she was. You know, these steps, right, these traditions and concepts will help you find out who you really are. One last thing, and I'm going to really shut it down. The fourth step, right, it talks about that. Okay, the fourth step is a turning point in our journey of recovery. It is a time for deep personal reflection. The confusion we attempted to mask with self-deception and drugs is about to diminish. We are embarking on a search for insight into ourselves, feelings, our fears, resentments, and the patterns of behaviors that make up our lives. I read that before, but they said you want to learn to be somebody you've never been before? Be yourself. You can't be nobody else. You can't be one of these dynamic speakers that you see at these conventions. Just be yourself. Because if God got you here, you have a message that's going to reach at least one person. And that's all you're responsible for, is reaching one person. And that person might reach 10,000 people. So just carry your message and don't try to be like nobody else. God made you unique, and who you're supposed to touch, you're going to touch. My name is Victor. Thanks for allowing me to share.